and welcome to Catholic Unapologetics. Today is our first episode, and I guess we're going to start off by talking about what we hope to achieve in this podcast.
I think this is kind of something we put together. It was almost a move of desperation at first, but now I think I've got a lot of hope in what we're doing, and it's really looking like it's going to be something cool.
Yeah, well, I guess the initial reason that I wanted to do this was I really love listening to, like, talk shows on the radio or whatever. My grandpa always did it, and it was always something, I guess, I found really fascinating hearing other people tell me about things, but their conclusions were always wrong, and so I just can't stand to listen to anybody, because, like, who are you going to listen to that you're just not going to get mad at?
Yeah, I remember, like, every morning when I'd wake up, I think it was Paul Harvey. Grandpa would have, he's like, so God made a farmer. But he would have that guy on every morning, and I would wake up to that, you know, and I don't know if it was recorded or if it was live, but it was something that was really nice.
I'd sit there and have breakfast. Paul Harvey is really entertaining.
But, yeah.
But, like,
say maybe from a Catholic perspective, but
there is no Catholic equivalent.
No.
And I'm not saying that we're necessarily going to be Paul Harvey, but hopefully we can be something that you can just put on, listen to, be thoroughly entertained, and not come out angry that the only people that have, like, somewhat conservative ideas are Protestants.
On top of that, I think as we speed up and as you have to, it's really hard to find time now, especially without everything you have to do to survive, to sit down and read for a couple hours and take in. But hopefully, maybe you'll be able to get a little bit of what we've been studying just off listening to us talk about it. And even fill in where people aren't having good conversations. So I've been in a lot of work environments where you take your headphones off and it's about the worst thing you'll ever hear in your life. Maybe we can provide some
sort of dialogue. I was thinking about that the other
day,
just like, you know, sending kids to public school. And it's like,
yeah.
They
won't get properly socialized.
Yeah.
Every time they're saying they won't get properly socialized, they're talking about socialism. It's not about friends.
Yeah. Oh, man. The things that just, like, I remember hearing, you know, on the bus or wherever.
Not only that, but, like, the lewd acts and other things that happen.
You know it's worse now than it was 10 years
100%.
ago.
Well, you think everybody has instant access to TikTok and stuff, and all it takes is a couple scrolls, and they're going to be exposed and trying to mimic that.
I remember, though, I was always terrified we were going to have a school shooting because they hammered that into us, like, every single year. And so I was just like, I'm probably going to get shot before I get out of here.
I think it's funny. I can remember, I guess it was preschool or pre-K, I went to a private school for a little bit. And they had senior day, and all the seniors wore their hunting outfits, and they literally brought guns to school. Nobody was worried about it. But by the time I was in third or fourth grade, everybody was thinking that, you know, they're all going to die, and they're going to put detectors in the school.
I can remember my dad saying people brought their hunting rifles or whatever just because
my dad
they were going to go hunting afterwards.
Dad said that they would keep it in the truck unless they're worried it was going to get stolen, then they'd put it in the locker.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess they had the full-size lockers. We only got the half-size.
Yeah. But anyway, so, yeah, we hope to give you something to listen to, something to give you,
like, to think with us and to just have something that isn't trash. I mean, you can tune into some podcasts that you get 2 or 3 hours of content, and you might get something good out of Joe Rogan, but it's going to be...
You're going to have to sift through quite a bit. So yeah, you can get on there and you can listen to a couple hours of Joe Rogan, and you're going to get maybe every fifth or sixth episode, you're going to get something that will really make you think. And in between that, you're probably going to have Neil deGrasse Tyson saying that, saying very normal science things like they're huge discoveries, or you're going to have some rock star tell you about his sexual exploits. And that's probably the best podcast out there for just content. And really past that, you're not going to find a lot else. There's a few kind of more modernist Catholic podcasts, but they're spotty. You don't know when they're going to be, and they're often hard to find when to tune into. Hopefully this will be something that's just there, something that we can provide as a service to all the other Catholic men out there.
Well, yeah, and I think it's important that we emphasize, I guess, the political part of being a Catholic man, because, you know, you can go ask the church, what's it mean to be Catholic or whatever, and they'll give you, like, the catechism of the church or whatever, and then they'll say, but we can't talk about politics. Well, yeah, if the priests aren't going to tell you who to vote for, somebody needs to, or you're not going to be, you know.
Yeah, and we're not here to work for a political party. We're here to work for Catholic interests. Our only politics, or at least I can speak for myself, my only politics is what I believe falls in line with the church. And so past that, I don't really have super strong political beliefs. But those beliefs are extremely strong, and I think they need to be heard, and they need to be, if you believe something, you need to stand behind it.
Well, and there's certain things that the church has, like, always taught about politically. Like, you know, there were things like Catholic Action, where the church was, you know, engaging people in politics because it's part of your Christian duty to, you know, make the world a good place. And I can think of, like, one story I can think of is, I believe it was John Paul II was sitting in the Vatican. Maybe it was during a council or something, and he was reading the Communist Manifesto. And they're like, what are you doing? And he's just like, I'm trying to know the enemy. And, you know, so that he can tell people why it's wrong, because you can't be Catholic and communist. And there's certain political things that, like, you can't support, you know? If you support a politician who supports abortion, you're excommunicated.
Well, that's something that needs to be talked about. People will say, well, there's socialist values within Christianity. Yeah, but we are not communists. It's people will say, well, I'm not one of those feminists, but I'm a feminist. If you are a feminist out and out, feminism is a broken, horrible system. Communism is a broken, horrible system. They might have one or two good things that we ascribe to, but you can't, doesn't mean that you can become a communist because one of the things is close to our faith.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that gets misconstrued constantly today.
Well, and the church hasn't really had a whole lot of historical okay with democracy. You know, we haven't just been saying democracy is the political system of the world and that everybody needs to be democratic. I mean, you can go and see what America's done in the last couple, two, three, four, five decades with democracy and see how much better the world's off because of it. I remember I was in a class, I think it was a speech class or whatever, and they were asking me a dumb question. And they were like, what's your best political system? And they had us, like, stand on one side of the room or the other. And me and this Muslim guy, we went and walked over and said monarchy.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's something a lot of people are going to probably take issue with, probably a lot of listeners to this take issue with, but it's really hard when you have a country that was basically founded by majority Freemasons, and which is now proven to be one of the largest causes of war crimes and genocide across the world, where you talk to our bombings or our pushover of other countries, or even down to just the fact that we are murdering more babies than just about anywhere else in the world, and are just one of the jumping off points for it. And those same people will still tell you that this system is the best system possible, and there is merit to some of the good of the system, but to act like there are no flaws is just ludicrous.
Well, it's crazy for us to think democracy is the best thing. Like, all right, you know, they say there's a famous Thomas Jefferson quote that, or maybe it was John Adams, I don't remember, that our country was not created for anybody but a moral populace. Well, our country was founded by Calvinists, you know, so.
Yeah, I think the only reason this country worked for a long time is that everyone was basically Christian, and once that started to fall apart, it didn't work. But even then, we've had so many issues. I mean, we've had, you go back, right in the center of our history, we stopped to kill each other for, you know, this huge civil war. Yeah. So you can't say that we've had just this bright and cheery history the whole time. Not to mention, you know, all the other atrocities you see throughout American history, which you can't just completely ignore. I don't know. When it comes to democracy, I have a hard time believing that 5,000 people are going to be right when almost everyone I meet in general is pretty far off of what Christ calls us to be.
Yeah. There's that old saying, better have one tyrant than 535.
Yeah. And at least in a lot of cases, a tyrant at least has some ties to his country's success, whereas today a lot of the people that we have elected have no ties to our country's success, and the only thing they really can do to better themselves is basically rape our country for financial profit.
Yeah. There's also the whole thing, like, if you have a monarch, it's really easy to know who to pray for, you know? He's responsible for everything, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, but we are, religiously, we're in a monarchy.
Our democracy is falling into a bureaucracy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the system that's playing us.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that you see. People will say, well, it's not supposed to be a democracy. It was always supposed to be a constitutional republic. But what happens when you can vote to change things within that constitutional republic that slowly, as public opinion fades and as your country falls down the drain, as you see the normal societal decay that happens in almost every big society, next thing you know, you have people voting to destroy the very things that made the country great. And now we're sitting in that time today.
Yeah. And if you want to look at the roots of democracy or republics, look at the Greek or the Roman Empire. And those societies weren't known for necessarily their, you know,
excellent morals. No, I mean, we've talked a lot about how even in seminary, they have us study a lot of the philosophers, especially Greek and Greeks, especially philosophers. And a lot of times, as you look into it, they're pedophiles and are coming from these extremely degenerate places.
The word is pedastery, and it's about a man and a boy having love. You can see the literal root, pedophile, pedastery, you know? But that's what they teach people in seminary.
Wonder where that could go wrong.
I mean, that's not for this episode.
Oh, no. But I think that gives a general idea. We are obviously, you can listen to this podcast no matter what your political views are. We are, for us, it's mostly religion. But when it comes down to religion, you have to express your beliefs throughout your entire life in every place. So that comes down to politics.
It's not just like keep your religion in your house. That's exactly. Not what separation of church and state was even about.
If you believe your religion, you can't do that. And I, whatever religion you believe, there's only one right one, but whatever religion you believe, if you don't practice it to the fullest extent, you're a hypocrite and you don't truly believe.
Yeah. Unless you're just a moral relativist and nothing matters except moral relativism.
There's a lot of those today, but that's automatic excommunication, isn't it? What are we going to talk about today?
Anthony Mary Claret, he's a saint canonized in the, I think it was canonized 1900s. He lived in the 1800s, and he was the bishop of Cuba, and before that he was a bishop in Spain. He was a priest, I guess. He like ministered to the queen over there, and I guess what I want to bring up right now is he had a vision. I don't know when it was in his life, but Jesus came to him and told him that communism was going to be an error that fell upon the world. I don't know. He wrote a lot of things because he lived in a time pretty close to ours, and he realized that with like the Gutenberg press and whatever, lots and lots of errors were being promulgated everywhere. And so he made it one of his things to spread holy religious texts so that people are like, you know, benefited by reading and not just brought lower and lower. And I'm sure you can just open a book in a bookstore and go to hell.
I was in one the other day, just looking at a new one here in town, and I found Augustine's works with the Imprimatur, and I found a Catholic Bible, and then like sandwiched in between was every kind of heresy you could possibly think of, and a couple books on Buddhism.
Yeah. And so I think like what he was saying back then about how important it is to read holy things. It's just all more true now. And, I mean, you can see that same sentiment echoed in John Vianney, who actually came before him, and other saints. Just like, if you're going to... We have a... You know, back when St. Jerome was around, nobody else was reading. And so it was easy to just say, well, we're going to lock up, you know, all the bad books. But now there's bad books everywhere, so replace them with good books. And hopefully, I guess this podcast will kind of fulfill that a little bit too, because, you know, for one, I'm translating right now some of St. Anthony Claret's works, because although he wrote a lot, the only thing I can find in English is his autobiography, and I think there's one other work I can remember seeing, which his autobiography is an excellent book, so I do recommend reading it.
How do you think it is that his works haven't been translated? Because most saints, you can find their works in just about any language around the world.
I guess he didn't. Well, there's. I don't know why the Claretians haven't translated all his works into English. Maybe they have, and I can't find them. But I can find them in Spanish, and so I'm going to put them in English. And
that's awesome.
There's a lot of saints that you really can't find in English, and so a lot of them are medieval, and so they wrote in Latin or whatever, and nobody went to the work of translating them. But even like really famous saints like Saint Bridget, I can't find her. I think it's her eighth book, you know, like
really.
Yeah. So there's.
I guess that's probably actually error on my part. Whereas I read what I can find in English, and if it isn't in English, I just don't know it exists.
Yeah.
I remember them saying that a lot of the priests from India have a hard time in seminary over there because a lot of stuff hasn't been translated. So I know it is a problem over there.
I think that's true in a lot of Asian countries. Like, I got a brother who speaks Japanese, and, like, you know, he's been to Japan, and I don't think that their source of religious works is very large, because for one, Japanese is really hard to translate into English, or English to Japanese, or Latin to Japanese, or whatever, and so it's hard to find anything that's there. There's a particular issue I can think of with Sister Faustina's diary. It was translated poorly, and for that reason it was subsequently banned for a couple decades.
I wonder if that's one of the reasons they have so many problems with cults and stuff over there, right? I remember the Ricin cult and a couple other, like, they'll have cults of Christianity pretty often. Maybe I just hear about it more.
Was the Ricin one a Christian?
Well,
affiliated group?
I think there's one with Ricin, and then I think there was one with,
There was the sarin gas. That's what I was thinking of.
Sarin gas. That guy thought he was Jesus.
Oh, okay.
I think it originally started as a Christian group, and then kind of like some of these other groups, the leader eventually decides they're the second coming or something similar.
I heard that about a guy in China once, but
really, I could be mistaken on that, but I know there's several Asian cults, Northern Asian countries.
Well, as it is, Japan is still very, 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 very much Buddhist. You know, like even in the Christian, you know, groups over there, like they don't have the resources that we have to learn our faith. You know, we can open up a Baltimore catechism and ta-da. And they have catechisms, but it's going to be the Nagasaki catechism or whatever, you know, that was written by a bishop who didn't speak Latin or whatever.
Sorry to derail us. So you're currently translating his works and trying to get it to where people can see it. Whether they exist or not, we're not 100% sure, but we're getting it out there to where people can actually read and understand what he's...
I find it really irritating when somebody translates something and then, like, charges you for it. Especially when it's, like, a holy, you know, saint book or something. It's like, all right, so you're going to charge me for salvation, you know?
Yeah. There's this weird line where people will bring up that, you know, we need to make this amount of money to be able to fund what we're doing. But I find most of the time they're making more money. And a lot of the times those things that they're getting funding for really could have been done without funding. There are things that definitely need the funding. Part of the problem with that is that we don't have the church body anymore as much dedicated to these things. I don't think I haven't seen a monk chained to a table transcribing scrolls in a long time.
You know, I heard like 5-10 years ago there was a group of monks that decided they were going to write the Bible out by hand like they used to a long time ago, and I think they made one copy,
Really?
It was like a whole monastery or something they made. Yeah.
That's impressive, and it's a cool prayer. Like, it's definitely, somebody might say that's futile, but I would say it's probably
it's a pretty cool active prayer. But
and I do know one person who is almost all the way through. If he hasn't finished yet, he has translated the Bible into Elfish runes, which is not a language that anyone speaks, but did it just because he wanted to. No. Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't say that I think it's a good idea, but I would imagine that he probably if he's not doing it mechanically, he probably understands the Bible a lot more.
Or thinks he does, anyway.
I guess. I mean, I would imagine that you would pick something up as you were reading and translating the entire Bible to elf language.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if he reads it with humility and stuff. But
I will say he doesn't seem to be doing it in any way out of... out of something to like show off. He's just doing it because he wanted to.
Yeah, you know how many people are going to be like listening to this and be like, "I got to find the Bible in Elfish." Famous.
I might have. I could provide a link. He's a pretty nice guy. If people are interested in just seeing what he's doing, I could probably show them what that is. You should probably check it and make sure he's actually translating it.
Yeah, he's just making stuff up.
He's just been scribbling on a page for a couple years.
Wait, so he's doing it by hand?
Yeah, all by hand.
Oh, I thought he was gonna like digitize it.
I'll find it after the podcast and show it to you. I'm sure he'll scan it or something. But yeah, he's translated almost the entire Bible into runes. But I don't think it's actually another language.
He's got all the Deuterocanonical books.
I don't know him that closely. I every once in a while pop over and see what he's doing. He's still writing runes, translating the Bible. I'm like, okay. This is something that we should be able to. You're actually translating. I'm the elf in this situation. I have no Spanish to speak of, really. I took a semester in college and never spoke it again and just have forgotten everything. And so for me, these works are completely inaccessible. It's something that I can't, that would never have been able to kind of water the seed of my faith at all.
Yeah, I'm sure there's way more than you even can imagine that hasn't been translated because we don't know that it needs to be. I think most of the church fathers that I have, posted on the site or whatever, I think they were originally translated by a Protestant and then maybe edited a little bit, but...
And do you think that's just... I'm guessing that was because the Protestants just believe in teaching themselves, and we've always kind of taught through a priest.
Yeah, I think that and the priest read Latin up until the 60s, and so he could read the original.
Before, they always say it was wrong that the church was quote-unquote suppressing information, but back then you could really take what was wrong and just keep it from getting out, whereas now everything is being spewed out. It's the same as like the internet. They try to censor all the news and everything, and really the only way now that you can shed light is to just show the truth and have transparent truth right in front of everybody where it's basically unquestionable.
That... I'll agree with the church fathers that I don't think they actually really tried to hide it. I think people were just too lazy to go and write it down by hand. The Bible, I think they made some attempts to keep it from people for the sole fact that you're not worthy of reading scripture if you if you think you can interpret it without the priest, you don't have holy orders, you don't have the right to teach or preach, and so. If you're going to take the Bible and think you do, you can find this in the Dewey Rhymes. They'll talk about it in the footnotes. There's church fathers that call you thieves of scripture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always find it ironic when somebody has the, bombacity to say, like, okay, well, I know there's all these early church fathers and thousands of years of people translating the Bible and arguing it back and forth within the church, but... I'm going to take this down to my trailer house and I'm going to figure the Bible out for myself over the weekend.
Yeah.
And a lot of people's faith, especially in our area, I think is basically like, okay, well, I saw a couple quotes I really liked. I read half a chapter of the Bible once, and I have a personal
relationship. There's a couple things I don't like, but I'm just going to say St. Paul was an idiot.
I remember when I was a kid, they used to say, oh, that stuff we leave up on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
you would say something like, especially with verses. So you talk about the banger verses that they'd hit you with, where like, oh, through faith alone and all this different stuff. And you go, okay, well, let's put it in context. And I remember one of the things they'd say is, well, we leave that on the shelf. That's not all Protestants, but I saw it a lot as a kid.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you are thinking about Protestantism or something, go try and find a religious Christian writing before 1500 and try and find him saying anything that the Baptist or the Methodist or, you know, name your religion, say. I mean, I'll give you the Jehovah's Witness seem pretty much like Arianism. They don't believe Jesus is God, you know? So they kind of do have a historical tie. But most all of the other Protestant sects have no basis in any historical faith. They just made it up because they knew better here in
which the is why you see so much fracturing among those groups.
Well, yeah.
So as you're translating this, what messages was he trying to get out in his time, and why was he obviously communism, but what else was he trying to put out there at the time?
I haven't translated a whole lot. I've translated two books right now and working on a third. And the first one was called Advice to Young Ladies. And so it had a lot of emphasis on modesty and purity. And
these are not allowed to talk about anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Feels like that a lot. I think it's not necessarily that even the church doesn't allow, but there seemed like there was this weird consensus where everybody got scared of it at once.
Yeah.
And instead of fighting back against the slow creep of kind of modernist heresy in general, but especially in the case of modesty in men and women, we just kind of gave up on it.
Yeah. Well, it's just insane how, like, if you think there was a modesty problem in the 1800s, you know damn well that we have one right now, because the bikini was invented by a guy who designed underwear, you know, and that's acceptable, you know?
To be honest, I don't think it's even acceptable that there's a guy designing underwear.
Yeah, I mean, really, I'm... Most of them are gay, but...
it's even worse, isn't it? but yeah, I think that basically what he's saying has... What he was worried about has all come to fruition, and it's not even worse than as he envisioned it.
I think it was like... You can find on YouTube or whatever these like really, really old audios, recordings, like from the 1920s or whatever. And I remember hearing... this old lady talking about back in 18 whatever in Paris, the women were just so immodest. And interestingly enough, that's the exact same time Anthony Claret would have been alive. And compared to today, I don't even know what he would say.
It's at this point, just about anything goes. I think there was some degree of, like, but even back then, we've talked about this before. Sins have always existed. It's not a completely new phenomenon. I think that as we invent more things, we allow ourselves to dive even deeper into those sins. We can use all of our new inventions either to grow closer to God and to grow closer to each other and to love one another and to follow God in His things, or we can use it to delve into the deepest depravity possible. And to make it darker and further from God in every way.
Yeah. I mean, that goes with a lot of technology, you know. You can make a nuclear power plant or a nuclear bomb.
Exactly, yeah. You can, I mean, I could, I could more easily use my computer to look up some of the most depraved things. They say that like the average like 15-year-old boy has seen worse things than most Roman emperors, just because of access to the internet.
Yeah.
But I could use this more easily than setting up a Discord call with a Catholic friend to talk about my religion, which took, you know, like 20-30 minutes of getting it working.
You can read every church father at, well, not every, but almost everyone at the tip of your fingers. And instead of reading that, we're going to read Pornhub or whatever people are doing these days. TikTok.
Yeah, well, and it's all about what actually pulls you in, and that's the problem with having it and having that near occasion to sin, is if you're sitting in a room with the early church fathers, you're probably going to read them. But if you're sitting in a room with covered in whores and the early church fathers, it might be a little harder to concentrate.
Yeah.
And that's one of the problems with what we have today.
Well, and I guess we'll probably say it again and again, but like, you can't just pretend to be a Catholic and be completely in the world. You know, you have to do something to keep yourself out of it, because you're not, as you like to quote, you'll say, well, Jesus ate with sinners, you know, but
yeah.
if you read that story and think that you're Jesus, you're reading it wrong.
Yeah, you are the sinner in that story. Jesus came to save you. If you think that, obviously we need to lead by example, and we need to show people by the way we live, but even if you read the early church fathers, they tell us like, hey, don't go worship with all these blasphemers. Don't go hang out in the presence of evildoers. We are to lead by example, and the priests are to preach and to bring people into the faith. You're not supposed to go marching on down to the strip club to be the Catholic guy down there. You know, well, you're supposed to be the Catholic guy in church,
yeah,
and have that as an open opportunity.
Yeah, and a lot of times saying, you know, you're so wicked that I'm not even going to,
associate
yeah. with you. Yeah, you're so wicked that I'm not going to associate you. It is way more powerful than saying, you're doing a few things wrong, but we can still be friends, you know?
Worse, not saying anything at all. I mean, I can't think of the exact quote, but basically, I mean, there is precedent saying that the people who say nothing, and when the people committing those sins get to heaven, and they're questioned before God, they say, he knew and he never told me. Why did you never tell me? And that will be, those sins will be held against us. Because if we sit there and sit idly by while people engage in sin, and they don't know it's a sin, and we could have told them, then that sin falls to us.
Yeah.
There's
a quote from
not only
Anthony Claret at the end of Advice to Young Ladies. He says, I am a watchtower for the house of Israel. I have to cry out. I gotta, you know, warn people, because if I don't, they're gonna accuse me of being a mute dog. Because as a bishop, he has, you know, a duty more than any of us do to preach to people. And then he says after that, he says, if they're not gonna listen to me, sister, perhaps they'll listen to you. And so, you know, we're not the watchtower, you know, we're not the priest. But, you know, I feel like we got to tell you, because if we don't, we're going to be held accountable too. You know, you can't just live life thinking that, you know, every time to church and you have the confiteor, you say, in my thoughts and in my words and what I have done and what I have failed to do, you know, you're not going to get to heaven by being a lazy bum.
I just think it's one of these things where, like, if you have a group of friends and they like to eat rat poison for fun, and first of all, if you engage with it, then you're no longer a healthy person. If you sit in a room and watch them do it, then you're letting them, if they don't know any better, and you let them eat rat poison for a day, then you might even get charged with murder if you know it's rat poison. You watch people unknowingly eat it,
yeah,
and if you sit there and they know they're eating rat poison, and you tell them, or if you don't tell them that it's wrong to eat rat poison, if they know they're eating rat poison but they don't know it's bad for them, you sit there and don't say anything, you're a bad friend.
Yeah.
But when it comes to sin, when it comes to the soul, people forget about all of that, and the next thing you know, that just goes out the window.
Yeah, in Claret's autobiography, he says that, I guess his worldview was shaped pretty much on that idea. He was just like, if you saw a blind person walking towards a pit, and he's gonna fall in, would you say, hey, you know, blind person, don't fall in that pit? And if he's like, no, I don't care, I'm falling in the pit, would you just let him, or would you do what's in your power to stop him? And there's, right. you know, so much more at stake here than your life, you know? It's
or feelings or anything. So many people today are scared of their perception in the world or what the feelings of the people that they talk to are, and that's the least of your worries when somebody's immortal soul is on the line. And that's a hard thing for some people to wrestle with, especially people who are naturally one to coddle people's feelings.
We're not currying favor with human beings, but with God.
Yeah, I know that I've told this story to you 100 times, but I love the story of Junipero Serra because he was in a situation where he was told to comply with sin, and he wouldn't. And I think a lot of people think that when you call out sin, it's going to scare everybody away, and that you should just let them kind of halfway participate in it, be nice.
Because maybe half is better than nothing, but if you remember what lukewarm is, you know.
Exactly. And so at the end of the day, so you have this story from Junipero Serra, who ended up in Mexico, and he gets placed in this church, and he shows up, and they're serving chocolates. The whole congregation. And so these women are sitting there, and they're eating their chocolates, and they're gossiping, and they're not paying attention to Mass. If they receive communion, they're receiving after eating chocolate without holding the fast.
Yeah,
they're
and
gossiping
back
in the
then
presence
the fast
of the Lord.
Wasn't just an hour either.
Yeah, you had to fast till midnight of the night before, or maybe even dusk. I don't remember.
Yeah, well, I think I heard they made it at 12 hours, but I can't remember that. I can't find it, and then midnight, and then 3 hours, and then they've made it so lenient that they just say 1 hour, but they kind of conditioned it saying 1 hour for those, you know, out of people's weakness, we're gonna lower it to one hour. So, like, you know, fasting is one of those things Catholics don't like to do anyway because it's hard, but you know, what is worth more to fast for than Christ Himself?
Not only Christ Himself, I think that when we take away these things that bring us closer to God to try to make it easier, it always does the opposite. Every time they try to take something and, we'll make it easier, maybe more people will stick around. They don't.
Yeah.
That's not. If people who really want to follow Christ aren't here for an easy road to heaven, that the whole point is to try to get to heaven in the correct way, to know, to love, to serve God. And serving God is not always the most comfortable thing here in a fallen world. I don't want to leave people with half a story. So he was told to basically, he went to his bishop and he goes, I can't do this. And the bishop told him, well, it's the culture here. We don't want people to leave the church. If you tell them they can't have their chocolate, if they tell them they have to listen and be respectful in Mass, you won't have anybody at church. And he's quoted as saying, better an empty church than a sinful one. But I heard someone tell me one time that what he said was better an empty church than one like actively engaging in sin. Better a church that is not evil than you better have an empty church than a church that's just evil and disrespectful to God. And so yeah, he told people that his church did clear out, but then the next week a few people came, and within a very short amount of time, his church was one of the most attended churches in the entire country. And a huge part of it was people who want to follow God truly, and taking all these things away and pretending like we don't have to actually fulfill what God asks of us doesn't help anybody.
Yeah. it's like those people that walk out right after communion or whatever, and I've been told by priests or, you know, other people, just like Judas did the same thing. You know, if you're gonna walk out right after communion because you think whatever work or whatever you have going on during that day is more important than...
That's a really profound statement. Yeah. I'd ask, how many of those same people that have told you that have actually taken the time to tell their entire congregation? You know, how often are these, if you know that and then you don't take the time to warn your
listeners? I had one altar server say that he wanted to put a sign up during Mass being like, if you leave early, so did Judas. I don't think he got allowed to.
That's a great comparison. I've never heard that, but I mean, I was always taught as a kid, like, there were rules to when you could leave Mass and when you could stay and what constituted being there. And, you know, if you're late to Mass, how late you could be and then how disrespectful. Like, we learned all that stuff, and it was important that I learned that, because without it, I would be like a ship just to sail. I'd just show up willy-nilly and wouldn't know why or how I was doing things.
Yeah. I mean, and so many people think that, you know, holy days of obligation or, you know, optional or whatever. Like, you have, you know, if you don't mind me bringing your Mexican friend in, like...
Oh, you're fine.
He'll just come to church when he feels like it. And he'll ask you, yeah, you know?
So I ride horses, and he also rides horses. And I find a good leisurely activity on a Sunday, something that I really enjoy, is to go horseback riding. It's calming. It makes my... From just a rejuvenation standpoint, it when you ride, it kind of like sets your back. And I work really hard, like manual labor job, and so it just feels nice. It's something that I really enjoy, and it's a good way to just kind of get out into nature. And so I meet up with some friends, and these friends are also Catholic, but they're not all the time. He'll be like, "So aren't you going to church today?" I'll be like, "Yeah, I'm going to church." And then the next week it'd be the same thing. "Aren't you going to church today?" "Yeah, I'm going to church for you." No. And it's this constant thing. And finally he was just like, "You are always going to church." Like it was some crazy, you know, crazy thing, like, to go.
Read the precepts of the church, and those are what you have to do to be Catholic.
Yeah. And he's not somebody who doesn't believe in God or somebody who doesn't, like, consider himself a Catholic. And I think he's, in general, tries to be pretty pious. But it's just, I don't know what to blame that on. But it's pretty sad.
Well, you want to wrap it up here?
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk a little bit about kind of what you hope to achieve by translating these works? We've talked a little bit about what he was writing about, what he saw, what his vision was. But why are we trying to make this available now, and how are we doing it? How can people find this?
Well, I guess I hope other people read it. I mean, I'm satisfied just myself and my family being able to read it, because you're never going to be able to read enough about, you know, pious things, because, you know, however, think how long you've been filling your mind with worldly things, and think how much of a waste that's going to be in the end. And so I hope other people read it. I think my translation is faithful, and I try and be as literal as I can be. But if you want to find it, it's on the website, catholicunapologetics.com, and it's going to be in the resources under Anthony Claret. I mean, there's a lot of other saints that you might want to read first. But, you know.
Awesome. Well, thanks, anybody. If anybody is listening to this, thank you for sticking with us through our first podcast. Hopefully you'll stick around for some more. It's only going to get better from here, and we hope that we can be with you through whatever times you're just trying to listen or maybe learn something.